You are listening to a free version of the Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Thursday, June 30th, 2022. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Steeder, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Natasha Lenard, columnist for The Intercept and author of Being Numerous, Essays on Non-Fascist Life. And later in the program, Greg Kasar will be joining us, progressive Democrat, running in the general in Texas's 35th district. Meanwhile, after throwing his hands up in the air and saying, not much I can do, after the Supreme Court overturned Roe v. Wade, Biden now says he backs a filibuster exception for the right to an abortion, meaning, I don't know, you guys just deal with it in the Senate. Speaking of the Senate, Biden appears to have a deal with Mitch McConnell on a nomination for an anti-abortion Federalist Society Republican to a lifetime federal judgeship in Kentucky. Bipartisanship. We stand. Conservative legal organizations have drafted model state legislation that would extend the bounty system to allow for suits for anyone who crosses state lines for an abortion or aids and abets in the crossing of state lines for an abortion. These are the states' rights people. Today, the Supreme Court has officially limited the EPA's ability to regulate power plant emissions, greenhouse gases, etc., preemptively, based on regulations that have not been put into place yet, or even proposed by Biden. Ketanji Brown Jackson will officially be sworn into office today, after Stephen Breyer's retirement is made official. NATO has formally invited Sweden and Finland to join its ranks after Turkey coincidentally decided to no longer veto their membership after Biden sold them some shiny new jets. You know, it's just major coincidences. Israel's parliament has officially voted to dissolve, making way for the fifth election in 4 years. Netanyahu looms large. And lastly, last month, the median national rent exceeded $2,000 for the first time in history. Rental prices are skyrocketing all over this country. All this and more on today's program. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's been a long time since we've had an M Majority Report. I guess it was last week, but I was on vacation and so much happened during that time. I was sad to not be able to be here for the Roe v. Wade official overturning on Friday. Just sad because I couldn't be on the show, obviously devastated for women throughout the country, scared for myself, my friends, although naturally I'm in a much more beneficial position than the great majority of women, people who can give birth in this country, I should say. Based on where I am, based on my race, based on a lot of other factors. And we're still dealing with the fallout from it. I couldn't have that not be the emphasis of the show today, frankly. Because the brutality continues in terms of the way the conservatives are ramping up their war on women, war on women's reproductive health. And frankly, where my ire has mostly fallen and my anger is not, it's yes, of course, against the Republicans. They are the driver of this, the conservative movement in this country. But I've been immensely frustrated by the Democratic response to this. Here's Biden at the NATO summit in Madrid answering some questions from reporters on what he will do to combat this overturning of abortion rights in this country. Biden loves punting to institutions. And even from a messaging perspective, outsourcing your presidential actions to others is not good because it looks weak. And yet, for some reason, it seems like it's the only thing that he's able to do.
Yeah, I'll just preface this with something Moshe Temkin said. I will repeat this as long as I have to. When the Supreme Court said in 1937 that the Social Security Act was unconstitutional, FDR didn't ask people to vote harder in the next election. He told the court he'd add more justices until they backed off, which they did. As a historian, it's just fascinating to see how entrenched the myth is that FDR's SCOTUS reform bill smeared as court packing was, quote, overreach, a, quote, failure, slash, quote, shot down. People don't know that it ended as a success for the New Deal and FDR, who never had to worry about SCOTUS again.
So here is Biden with, after essentially, and I'll read you from this Reuters piece, where he was like, I'm not doing much. He gave it this much, and it was just to say, okay, Senate, maybe you can do a filibuster carve-out.
I believe we have to codify Roe v. Wade in the law, and the way to do that is to make sure the Congress votes to do that. And if the filibuster gets in the way, it's like voting rights, it should be, we provide an exception for this, require an exception to the filibuster for this action to deal with the Supreme Court decision. Hang on, I got one more here. Kelly O'Donnell, NBC.
Thank you, Mr. President. Well, you just made some news saying you would support changing the filibuster rules to codify abortion rights broadly across the country.
Right to privacy, not just abortion rights, but yes, abortion rights.
So notice that right to privacy point.
It's going to fail us.
Yeah, because frankly, it's a really difficult tightrope for Democrats to walk when they talk about everyone has a, every woman, every person who can give birth has the right to reproductive health care, but not other health care. Not other health care. And by the way, the federal government's not going to pay for it or even touch it because of the Hyde Amendment. So, like, you have the right to just access it if you want. I mean, the idea that it's a right then is severely undercut, is it not?
We need to stop talking about this right to privacy stuff. That stuff's, it's in the past. I mean, actually, in Montana, the state Supreme Court had a similar right to privacy enshrined for to protect abortion. Republicans, guess what they're going to do? They're going to stack the court until they can get rid of that. That's the only solution to this sort of thing. And the right to privacy, like, then it needs to be a right to abortion, which needs to be part of a broader right to health care.
Yes.
That's the only way forward from this. I'm sorry. It would have been nice if this sort of right to privacy Roe tactic could have lasted for our entire lives and for the lives of our children, whatever. It didn't. It failed. It's gone. And we have to move on now to demanding right to health care that includes abortions. It includes transition care, includes anything you want. That you need for your health. And I mean,
but they don't want to touch that. I mean, the point, that's the point, right?
And if they can't touch that, they're going to continue to fail us.
Yes. Biden is, I said this last night on Twitter, Biden is the, but the ship can't sink guy from Titanic, as the Titanic is already sinking halfway
under, it's underwater.
Right. Exactly. And, you know, he is an institutionalist at a time where the institutions are completely failing us. So, I mean, here is a report from Reuters last night. I just want to read a little bit from it from you because, you know, it was updated this morning when he said on Madrid time, when he said that that he would support the filibuster. But this is from Reuters yesterday. The White House is unlikely to take up the bold steps to protect women's rights to have an abortion that Democratic lawmakers have called for in recent days, interviews with officials show. Lawmakers, including Senator Elizabeth Warren and Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who we'll get to in a second as a contrast to Biden, have suggested Biden limit the Supreme Court's jurisdiction or expand its membership, end the legislative filibuster rule, build abortion clinics on federal lands, declare a national emergency, and establish Planned Parenthood outposts outside U.S. national parks, among other options. Now, the filibuster, you should end it altogether. I mean, even Nancy Pelosi from her House seat, as much as we can't stand her, believes, because the legislation that the House passes dies all the time in the Senate because of the filibuster. It should be over to begin with, but Biden is only in favor of tweaking it as a half measure. He's the half measure guy, or maybe even like 10% measure guy. No discussion from Biden on the limitation of the Supreme Court's judicial review jurisdiction. No discussion of expanding the Supreme Court. And why is that? The White House is pursuing a more limited set of policy responses while urging voters in Congress to act. Voters. Vote for us because of the things we won't do.
A few days after
the we cannot do more things.
A few days after the decision, polling came out that showed this is a new race. The Democrats are up, and that was the worst thing you could ever show to these folks, because they're just going to ghost ride that into or coast into the midterms on that.
This is the limits of the concept of popularism, too, because for Democrats, for this Democratic leadership is currently constructed, it does not matter how. Well, one, polls that have them ahead cause them to shrink like violets. And even if they have overwhelming popularity for some sort of action, they refuse to act on it because they are scared of the ramifications. It's not about popular will riding you to power. It's about seizing power when you have it. The White House's plans include a range of executive actions in the coming days, as well as promising, pinky promise, to protect women's women who cross state lines for abortions in support of medical abortion. Biden officials.
Let's see, because at this point it doesn't look like there's a lot set up to go after those women. Let's see if that infrastructure does get set up, how much Biden is going to protect.
How much Merrick Garland? Does Merrick Garland exist? Is he some sort of hologram like the Queen or Tupac?
He's the Wizard of Oz.
Yeah. Biden and officials are concerned that even more radical, that more radical moves would be politically polarizing. Despite the what we just talked about, the overwhelming support for abortion rights. Yeah. Any move would be politically polarizing. Any action that you take, except for punting it to the Senate and say you deal with it with the filibuster carve-out, which isn't going to happen.
And this is a polar issue. People who are anti-choice are freaks, and you should polarize against them.
And what is polarization, right? It means that it's divisive and that you don't have the will of the people on your side. What's polarizing then if over 60% of Americans support abortion rights? What is polarizing, what isn't polarizing? It's like the same thing that we're talking about with universal background checks. If 90% of Americans support it, 10% don't. Is that still polarizing? Because there's a smaller poll and there's a big poll on the other side. It doesn't necessarily matter how much ground is made by in terms of popular support. Like, Democrats use that to their advantage in order to win elections, to say, look how reasonable we are. But then when they're in power, it doesn't matter how popular something is because they don't do anything about it. Even when we're facing an existential threat, like women's rights being taken away right now. Biden and officials are concerned that more radical moves will be politically polarizing ahead of November's midterm elections, undermine public trust in institutions like the Supreme Court, or lack a strong legal footing, sources inside and outside the White House say. You know what undermined public trust in the Supreme Court was when they overturned Roe v. Wade?
Yeah, I mean, good. Anything that can undermine public trust in the Supreme Court should be done.
And you know what lacks strong legal footing? The overturning of Roe v. Wade. Biden is, quote, telling people the truth and putting the focus where it needs to be, holding Republicans' feet to the fire for the harm they're causing, a White House official said when asked about the strategy. But you're not.
First of all, you can't just support a bill. You have to demand it. You have to demand your dumbass party gets its shit in gear and decides to take action and doesn't just talk about it in the press.
It's unbelievable. I mean, it really is unbelievable. The kind of, like, the arrogance of expecting that people are going to support you because you call upon them to act when you refuse to do those actions yourself. You punt it to the Senate. You say everyone else hold Republicans accountable. And at the same time, he's cutting deals with Mitch McConnell. Apparently, this may not stand once he gets public pushback because this is a theme with the administration. But apparently, he's going to nominate an anti-abortion Republican Federalist Society guy, Chad Meredith, to a lifetime federal appointment in Kentucky. And even House leadership just campaigned with the only anti-abortion Democrat in the House, in Henry Cuellar, who's now, you know, doing a victory lap in Axios interviews. Yeah.
And even if he does, like you say, like go back on that, like what does it say that that's where we're at still? That, like, that's the movement.
Yeah.
That's the inclination. No matter whether he walks it back, that's his inclination.
And what's it in favor of? Like, or what's it in exchange for? Do we even know? Do we even know? Did he get any assurances from McConnell?
Like, the only thing that...
He gave him a cookie.
Is
a bridge, maybe.
The only thing that would make sense is if McConnell's got, like, snipers on him at all times and telling him exactly how to act.
Here is Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on Stephen Colbert in contrast to this.
Of course, on Friday, they overturned both Casey and Roe v. Wade. What is your reaction to what you're hearing from the Supreme Court?
Well, I think one of the things that we're seeing here is the Supreme Court is actively delegitimizing itself.
When you mean delegitimize, and I want to hear the rest of the answer, but yeah. I hear that word delegitimize, and certainly in Casey, they actually were worried that they would lose legitimacy in the court. They'd do irreparable damage to the court.
Yes.
What do you mean when you say delegitimize?
So what that means is that the Supreme Court has a power. Its power is in whether its rulings are heeded and respected, and if so, how much and to what extent. And when we have the framing of, you know, the framing of our government, the presidency, Congress, the president, Congress, and the Supreme Court are supposed to be three co-equal branches, co-equal, none with supremacy over the other. And when any one of those branches overreaches its authority, it is the responsibility of the other two to check the overreach of that authority. The Supreme Court has engaged in the overreaching of its authority in denying the human and civil rights of any pregnant person or person that could become pregnant in the United States of America. They have engaged in overreach, and it is the responsibility of the president and Congress to put the Supreme Court in check because they have delegitimized themselves.
And it, with that answer, that's like honestly an answer that Biden could very easily articulate. Well, I mean, I don't know how much he can articulate right now, frankly. Yeah. Well, but in terms of the rhetoric there, that does not call for an abolishing of the Supreme Court. I mean, that is not some of the more radical ideas that we play around with here on the show, that in theory, you know, I don't believe in the Supreme Court as an institution, let alone judicial review. But this is how an elected official uses the rhetoric of those institutions as a way to hold them in check and do the right thing. Institutions in and of themselves have zero value. Zero value. I'm sorry. Like, it's only just a religious obsession that we have in the United States. People think that here in this country that we're freer because we don't have a king or whatever. No, we're as religiously obsessed with our own mythology as any other country. And what is valuable is having a communicator like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez come out and say, no, this is how we can use, at least in the short term, that mythology to do the right thing. Institutions are not inherently moral. It's only the actions and the that they promote and foster, and the people that they protect. And if you're not using institutions to expand people's rights and to protect people, they're worthless. They're garbage. Wipe your ass with them. I don't care. And so this is the way that Democrats should be approaching this issue. And I'm appreciative of her, especially over the past week, for being clear-eyed in the action items that she's been promoting and espousing versus the White House, where I've seen very little of that.
I just want to say she's just out, says, a filibuster breaking Supreme Court constrains the EPA's power to regulate greenhouse gases. That's another case. The vote is 6-3 along ideological lines, I guess. Catastrophic, AOC says. A filibuster carve-out is not enough. We need to reform or do away with the whole thing for the sake of the planet.
Yep. All right, with that said, we're going to take a quick break. But first, just so you know, Just Coffee is still having their sale. Use code MR25 to get 25% off. Now, you're always going to get 10% off the MR blend and others, right, with MR10. So justcoffee.coop, fair trade tea and coffee. Now, use the code for limited time. MR25, get 25% off. It's really just excellent coffee. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Natasha Lenard. We are back, and we are joined now by Natasha Leonard, or Leonard, I'm so sorry, columnist. She literally just told me, and then I just screwed it up. columnist for The Intercept and author of Being Numerous, Essays on Non-Fascist Life. Natasha, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks so much, Emma. It's good to be here in dark times.
Yes, well, I mean, as I mentioned before, I was on vacation when the Roe... when the Roe decision was officially handed down. And, you know, so I'm hoping we can talk about it from a broad perspective and hit a lot of the angles as the story is kind of rolling and unfolding, and Republicans and conservatives and state legislatures are figuring out new ways to strip women of their rights, ensure that women don't go across state lines in order to seek an abortion, et cetera. But, you know, you've been on the beat, the Roe beat, the abortion beat, for The Intercept. What was your immediate reaction when the decision was officially handed down, even though technically we knew it was coming for a while, but still to have that death nail was, you know, a gut punch.
Right. And I think, you know, obviously, pretty much everyone who follows the news at all knew this was coming since the leak of the Alito opinion in June. But those on the front lines, or those who've been covering the struggle for reproductive rights and broader reproductive justice, have also known that this was coming for many years. And indeed, for so many people who live in abortion-restricted, now abortion-banned states, access to abortion has been so difficult. It's basically been a post-Roe status quo long before this. But as you say, just something being expected doesn't make it any less horrifying. And of course, now that the legal status quo has changed and the stripping away of all constitutional protections, that's not the end game for Republicans. What we're seeing now, which we also saw in various states, for example, with the really vile vigilante SB8 law in Texas, which was on the books prior to the fall of Roe, we're going to now see this build up and escalation, and indeed attempted and often successful, you know, hopefully not, but likely in a number of cases, successful enforcement of these most reactionary and fascistic anti-abortion, patriarchal, fascistic, Christo-fascist laws. So, you know, the turn in terms of pre-Roe, post-Roe, is a more kind of gradual and long fought for by the Christo-fascist right event than just last Friday. But I do think it, you know, if this means anything, it's time to really kind of gather forces as broad and potent as we can in order to face what not just has happened, but what is coming next.
Do you mean just vote in November?
You know, just vote harder, guys. Go vote. I don't know. Go to Congress with your Handmaid's Tale liberal nonsense on. No, of course not. I mean, obviously, right. I wouldn't say screw voting. But no, of course, it's wildly insufficient. We've got, you know, technically, we've got Democratic control now. And look where that's led us. I think we can be really quite assured in the fact that this Democratic Party will not save our basic reproductive rights, let alone anything like, you know, reproductive justice, which, you know, in the history of Black women's organizing doesn't just mean access to abortion, but, you know, the ability to choose when, if, or if ever, to gestate and reproduce, and to do so with welfare, with support, with community, with healthcare ongoing. So that struggle, the idea that anyone in the Democratic Party who's in any establishment power now, especially the president, and indeed anyone in congressional leadership, could offer that to us, it's a joke. So obviously, this is going to really be about a lot of following the lead of those groups, organizations, abortion funds, you know, people who have been on the front lines in extremely abortion restricted states and around the country in the last few years, because this is not new to them. This struggle is not new to them. And that's where we have to look to build power and you know, build solidarity.
Well, you wrote about how, you know, in the Texas law, the bounty law that they're that they were the first state, and a lot of states have copied it, which tried to circumvent Roe via the civil model, which is now, I would imagine, all of these states are going to move towards criminalizing women or anybody who, quote, aids and abets an abortion on the state level. You talked about how there are many examples of, like, honestly, this kind of ironic intersectionality of these bounty kind of laws where in the South, in the Jim Crow South, mob violence was used in order to cement patriarchy and white rule for a really long time, and how this is kind of an extension of that. Do you mind expanding on that point? Because I think that that's so key to understanding this.
Absolutely, and I think it's key to understanding the kind of the long legacy of this kind of allegiance between far-right vigilantism and a reactionary state, and a nationalist movement that have obviously defined this country since its birth. But it's also important to think about that intersection when we see how the struggle for reproductive rights is inextricable from the struggle for racist justice, the anti-fascist struggle for racial justice and against white supremacy. Because if you think about the history of these sort of vigilantes and how they upheld certain hierarchies, patriarchal rule, white rule, as you say, lynching in the Jim Crow South. And, you know, not even in just the South, if we're talking about slave patrols in the North that also would notably capture fugitive, formerly enslaved or enslaved women who were trying to escape. And indeed, it was the very story that informed the Toni Morrison great book, Beloved, of a captured fugitive enslaved woman who, instead of having her child returned to enslavement, killed her. So it's this long history of control of bodily autonomy. We say the same with the history of the Texas Rangers and heavily armed right-wing militia now who round up immigrants on the southern border. This is how the state has historically enforced, its white supremacist status quo, and that is also a patriarchal status quo. So, if we understand that history, clearly, it's unsurprising to see that this is the same mechanism and the mode of law that these states are trying to rely upon still. And we understand the kind of extent and intersectionality of the struggle that this is, and it can't be piecemeal.
I wanted to play this. I was going to save this for a little bit later in the program, but it fits so well into what we're talking about here. This is a clip of a panel from a bunch of conservative commentators, Ben Shapiro and the whole Daily Wire crew, talking about abortion. And specifically here, Candace Owens says that there was, quote, no abortion happening when we had slaves. This fits in nicely to our conversation. So let's play a little bit of that.
My favorite is on abortion, where you'll see them say things like Ayanna Pressley said this today, the Democratic congresswoman from Massachusetts. She said today, you know, the real problem with banning abortion is it's going to disproportionately harm LGBTQ people. And I thought to myself, I'm going to need a chart on this one. I may not be an expert. I mean, I have three kids of my own, but I may not be an expert. I'm fairly certain that this is not primarily going to target gay men and lesbian women.
Amy Schumer, same thing. She came out and gave a statement about this is exactly what the slaveholders wanted. And I was like, I would like a further explanation as to what you are talking about when you make that statement, because there was no abortion happening when we had slaves. Yeah,
So, I mean, to that point, we were just discussing this, how inextricable and intersectional all of this is, and how reproductive justice is really about women having control, black women having control over their own bodies, and how so much of this suppression of and stripping of women's rights is really linked to ownership and the perception of ownership over black bodies by white people and by capitalists.
Right. And, you know, a couple of points to make, too. Of course, you know, I want to say there is absolutely no, even though this is a patriarchal strike against women's rights, it is also against other pregnant people. And it is also no accident that that these attacks on abortion access and abortion rights come hand in hand with the most violent assault on trans lives in the last 2 years. Over 200 anti-trans bills passed in red states, denying healthcare, treating the loved ones, loved adults of trans kids as potential abusers in Texas. You know, these sort of bathroom bills, sports bills, they're all about asserting this white patriarchal standing, the white patriarchal familial standing. So that comes part and parcel with, you know, women and pregnant people's bodily autonomy, you know, gender identity, gender non-conformity, trans lives, and indeed racist oppression. So I think, you know, the idea that they, Shapiro's mocking that this could have, I mean, that this would have anything to do with, do I think it is primarily an LGBTQ issue? Is, you know, that's not the point at all. It's no doubt an anti-woman issue as much as anything, but, you know, trans women can be women indeed. But his laughing at it is so absurd, because I think Ben Shapiro should know as much as anyone how intertwined the control over bodily autonomy and sovereignty is, and why, and hence the attack on trans lives.
He's as pronatalist as anybody, which is like the, sorry to cut you off, but he's as pronatalist as anybody, where it's, you know, part of why being trans is so wrong is because you are not producing to children in the same way, in a natural way, as described by him.
Exactly. And, you know, all these, the kind of right wing agenda is sort of unabashedly, and has been for some time now, this pronatalist palingenesis, you know, this this nationalistic rebirth of this notional nation, this, you know, white, pure, Herrenvoke democracy being established. So, of course, it's across the board in terms of its oppressive reach. And, you know, we do very well to fight it accordingly, which requires across the board solidarity. And certainly, you know, would mean that anyone who doesn't see this as an anti-racist struggle and LGBTQ struggle as well is really going to fail in pushing back and fighting the extent of this fascist ascendancy.
And to Candace Owens's point about how abortion was there was no abortion happening when we had slaves. I mean, it's just.
I mean, there's been abortion as long as there's been birth, right?
Yes.
So, and also, you know, just bringing up, you know, slavery and birth, you know, forced birth as a mode of upholding enslavement as a status and a state of being and an entire like underclass of human through forced birth. That is the legacy we have to be keeping in mind here, because the agenda right now is same in its ideological underpinning.
Absolutely. And forced birth as a method of control of women, I think, is necessary in order to accurately frame this, because if a woman is forced to give birth, say she's in an abusive partnership, or she just doesn't want to be in that relationship, or it's not the right time, her options are limited severely. And that is the goal of Republicans. It is a way to keep women more chained and tethered to the man and to the patriarchy by limiting their individual options to participate in society.
Absolutely. And obviously, because these laws and these bans will predominantly affect working class people, poor working class people, poor working class people of color, particularly ensuring someone is forced to carry a pregnancy through, or, you know, which includes often, risking their own lives. That is also a way to maintain class stratification, right? Like do I think that every single Republican operative is sitting around thinking, mwaha, this is how we maintain white supremacy and class stratification in these exact moves? No, but it is nonetheless the ideological underpinning and the shape of this pronatalist nationalist agenda.
Yes. And, so let's turn a little bit to one, the future of these abortion bans, targeting pregnant people who can become pregnant, and how likely it is that there's going to be a federal ban in place. I still see some credulousness that, maybe that's not the right word. I feel that Democrats or media members writ large or the population are not taking seriously enough the prospect of a federal abortion ban targeting people that can become pregnant, people or pregnant people. And Mike Pence has said as much. This is a part of the Republican agenda. And if the Democrats do not end the filibuster or amend the filibuster in order to enshrine Roe into law, by God, Republicans are going to do it if they get power, if they get, the presidency and they maintain power, because they're likely going to win at least one chamber in the fall come 2024.
Right. And, I can imagine a lot of, centrist Democrats being like, well, that would be a hypocrisy. They said it's about states. It's like, okay, you're going to play that. What their hypocrites argument, like hypocrisy is not the problem. Fascism is the problem here. And of course, that is the fascist agenda that they're making very clear. They are clear that that's their agenda. I'm not one to kind of be like, well, certainly that will work and that's going to happen. I think we have, even more immediate and prescient concerns about the enforcement of the bans that are now already in place. As I've mentioned in some of my writing recently, there's been some really interesting thinking and terrifying thinking from the right about, the coming legal battles when, with this growth in criminalization of abortion, abortion seekers, abortion providers, between states. There's a very interesting new paper recently published in the Columbia Law Review that points out that, the right wing have always said, well, one good thing about getting rid of Roe, aside from the fact we really want it and we're Christo nationalists, is that it will simplify any of these interstate and state federal jurisdictional legal battles. In fact, we are about to enter into an absolute quagmire of legal cases. You've got, anti-abortion groups and think tanks and their allies in state houses already trying to think of legal ways to stop abortion seekers crossing state lines or to prosecute those in abortion legal states who aid them. And then, thankfully, in a number of abortion legal states, you've got abortion protective states, you've got state houses passing laws like that in Connecticut, recently California, New York, to protect those who provide abortion services to out-of-state seekers, the attempts to criminalize anything from giving advice online, aiding in getting the legal anti-abortion pills. These legal battles are all to come, and it's by no means clear how they'll necessarily end. But in the meantime, women and pregnant people will suffer. And those on the front lines are not going to be waiting for the kind of final decisions to come out and court battles to wind their way through. Obviously, it is not to be ignored, and we should be pushing legislators and being, very, very careful about who's being voted for attorney generals and district attorneys, with those kind of things in mind when we do local voting. But I certainly think, because we'll have to rely on some district attorneys who won't be prosecuting abortion seekers and providers and aiders and abettors, which I hope we all plan to do some aiding and abetting. And I think, those sort of battles will be happening on the ground through kind of careful online interactions, through solidarity networks, through, bail funds, through abortion funds. And there will be some really unprecedented court battles that go to the very question of whether this republic makes any sense at all and has any coherence, because this will certainly, the end of Roe has certainly not simplified that.
Yeah, so last question here, because I appreciated that reframe. It's easy to, even fall into the electoral trap that Democrats really have no other mode of except to operate in, is thinking about the fall. But in the months to come, we're going to see, ectopic pregnancies that cause health complications, even death for women that go untreated, doctors and providers targeted, their services chilled, and more. Republicans have no problem operating outside of legality, and they've won through that. So what are some of the things that this audience maybe can do? I want to support some abortion funds. I'm going to, but other than that, what are some of the processes? And say there's somebody who may become pregnant in this audience, and that's in the state that would be criminalizing them. What are some of the pathways for still providing abortion care in this country outside of these draconian bans?
Well, I think certainly looking for abortion funds, because they often have ways of directing you to clinics that then can indeed be supported by those funds. If we're talking about the incredibly safe abortion pills that you can take in an early pregnancy, Plan C Pills, so I'm going to say that plancpills.org is a fantastic resource that can talk you through and educate you on, how abortion pills work, access, and indeed the very notion of self-managed abortion, the very liberal rhetoric of between a woman and her doctor, that is actually a pretty restrictive notion of the terrain of safe abortion. There are self ways to medically self-managed abortion. And there are websites like plancpills.org that can guide you through that. I'm not the expert, but there are an incredible amount of resources out there, abortion funds like La Frontera Fund in Texas, that have been doing this work. So I think the most crucial thing is we don't need to start from zero. This battle has been hard fought by women and pregnant people and their allies, anti-fascist allies, for a long time, and it's time to join and build that solidarity as opposed to saying, okay, let's start from zero and go.
Natasha Leonard, columnist for The Intercept, author of Being Numerous, Essays on Non-Fascist Life, thank you so much for your time today. Really appreciate
it. Thank you. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Greg Kasar, running in Texas's 35th. We are back, and we are joined now by Greg Kasar, running in Texas's 35th in the general election, which is very exciting. because Greg is a progressive Democrat, justice Democrat, all those good things. Greg, thanks so much for your time today coming on the program.
I appreciate being able to be on.
Yeah. So I guess I would be remiss if I did not ask you to respond to the news of the past week with Roe officially being overturned on Friday. In Texas in particular, your state has unfortunately, under Republican leadership and at the forefront of these preemptive abortion bills, Texas was the author, really, or the first to implement these bounty-type systems that have been copied in a variety of other states. What's your response to the news this week, and how has your state and your community responded?
It's obviously a horrific ruling that has immediate effects on our community here. Everybody talks about how everything's bigger in Texas, and it means that for many people, you won't be able to get to an abortion clinic for many of my constituents in some of the poorest parts of the state unless you drive to Wichita, Kansas, 600 miles away. And abortion rights are also attacked in Kansas because of Roe falling. And if that goes wrong in Kansas, then it might mean Albuquerque, New Mexico, which is over 700 miles away for many of my constituents in places like San Antonio, or going to Mexico itself. But because of the lack of immigration reform, there's so many people that can't go to Mexico and then come back. And so it is immediately having devastating effects for people and for families. Right now, there is a fight about whether or not abortion is immediately banned in the state or whether it's banned in 30 days. And the fight is happening in the courts every single day, back and forth. But there's just that immediate horrible harm. And then it clearly signals a real crisis in our democracy, a crisis we've known has been brewing, but it makes it so clear. And it's such a moment for us to say, how can we have a court that has essentially been packed by Donald Trump rule over our lives? How is it that if the majority of Americans and the majority of Texans believe in reproductive freedom and abortion rights and equality for marriages and worker rights and addressing the climate crisis, why can't we do something about it? And it shows the transformation that we need to have to the system. So the last thing I'll say is that actually Roe v. Wade was not born in some progressive edge of the country or on the coast. It was actually born here in Texas when the Texas abortion ban that was being upheld by then Dallas District Attorney Henry Wade was challenged by Sarah Weddington, a 20-something-year-old attorney who had never taken a case to trial before. She represented Norma Corvey, who went by the name Jane Roe, and Sarah Weddington took that case all the way to the Supreme Court and won Roe v. Wade. And so a Texas ban is actually what brought us Roe v. Wade, and I believe it is organizers and women and communities in the South and in Texas that have the responsibility of bringing it back.
And if you are to win your race in the fall, what would you support in terms of measures to limit this court? Would you support limiting judicial review? Would you support expanding the court? Other proposals that people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez have backed? The president is not on board with these, unfortunately. But I do think that, you know, you call it court packing by Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell and Trump got their way in terms of bending the system to their will. Now I think it's time for Democrats to do the same.
I think that we absolutely have to have all of those measures on the table and call for the community to bring even more ideas to us. I come from a background of being a labor organizer and a community organizer, and so often it is from our communities that we get the best ideas to make change. I would absolutely sign on to bills to expand the Supreme Court, and let's bring all the other ideas to the table. As AOC so brilliantly has laid out, Abraham Lincoln had to take on the Supreme Court. FDR had to take on the Supreme Court. And if we don't do it now, then it doesn't matter what majorities we win in Congress or in the Senate or the presidency. If we have 9 unelected people, many of them overwhelmingly appointed by right-wing presidents that didn't have the popular vote, governing our lives indefinitely. That isn't right. That's not what most people believe in. And so I think we have to take those steps. Those would be some of the things I can support when I'm elected. But the fact of the matter is, that's the work we can do right now. I'm in a general election contest that I will almost overwhelmingly win, right? It's a Democratic packed seat. The Republicans drew these seats to put as many Latino and progressive voters into one seat to try to maintain their control in Texas. Well, now all of these working class communities and communities of color that have been packed into one seat, we can make our voices loudly heard, not just by waiting till November, but for demanding action from the administration and from the Congress and from every institution right now.
Yeah, I mean, and that's look, that's good to hear. And the fact that you come from labor and immigrants' rights organizing in your background, I feel like probably gives you a bit of a different perspective on what's possible on the ground, because I'm immensely frustrated with the Biden administration's fealty to institutions and that being the focus, where it really should be focused on people on the ground. So do you mind talking about your experience as an organizer in both of those fields, in labor and in immigrants' rights, and how that's kind of given you maybe a different perspective than some of the Democrats who, frankly, have an outdated view of how Democrats can win and seize power and wield it in this country, if they're even interested in that.
Yeah, well, I think what we need to do is to make sure that folks recognize that there is work that we can do. We have to stop talking so much about what we can't do and get to work on what we must do. And I think that that excites voters, and it's also our job. And it builds purpose for our life to actually make change. So one example in the immigrants' rights work is that Governor Abbott made it his top priority when he saw Donald Trump get elected to see if he could be a mini Donald Trump and attack immigrants as his main message. And so one thing that he prioritized was a bill called the Show Me Your Papers law. It is a law that makes it so that police officers in Texas can't be banned by governments from asking people to show me your immigration papers. But in being in rooms with lots of undocumented folks and their families, it was actually a construction worker who brought up the idea and said, well, what if you required, before a police officer asks the question, show me your papers, require that police officer to say, I'm going to ask you a question. You don't have to answer it. And I won't do anything if you don't answer the question. And that's exactly what we put into policy and exactly what we put into law here in Austin, Texas, when I was a city council member coming out of the immigrants' rights movement, is that we don't have to just say, well, we don't have the votes or the governor is bad. And so let's try at some point to win an election. Let's fight for people now. And that also clearly then shows people that there will be a real difference if they elect progressive Democrats to office. And I think that's what we should be doing right now. Right now, we had a real human tragedy in San Antonio, just miles from my district, where 50 people were found dead, hiding in a tractor trailer, scorched to death. And the fact of the matter is, all of us should and can have real empathy for our brothers and sisters, whether the U.S. government wants to call them citizens or not. And we should be mobilizing people to say we need common sense immigration reform because it saves lives and it takes care of people in our community. And so instead of running away from issues like immigration reform or workers' rights, we should be embracing those, because I think that's what the vast majority of people in this state support. We showed it in my election, where we won 4 times more votes than anybody else running on Black Lives Matter and LGBTQIA rights. And on a $15 an hour, if not much higher, minimum wage. That's what the majority of Texans support. They just want to know that if they actually go and do that work, that we will execute.
So let's play this clip of Greg Abbott talking about that awful tragedy where over 50 migrants at this point have died of overheating in a tractor trailer near your district. Just an absolute gruesome, awful, awful story. And naturally, Abbott has found a way to blame President Biden for this. Here's Greg Abbott discussing the tragedy here.
Now, going back, many of these deaths could be prevented if Biden simply fully funded the Border Patrol operation of the United States of America and implemented the policies that the Border Patrol needs in order to do their real job, And the real job is not the paper processing work that they've been assigned to do. The real job is both to secure the border as well as to do things like inspect the vehicle that was carrying those people who lost their lives.
I mean, I'll save my commentary for later. Greg, what's your response to that?
I mean, Governor Abbott, upon finding out that people in our state have died, he didn't share his condolences. He didn't say that we need to pray for there's children that were sent to the hospital who survived. I mean, nobody listening to him, nobody in the state believes that he cares about the lives of immigrant families. And so then for him to take this kind of a tragedy and use it to try to start setting up his run for president, it's just wrong. It's just wrong. And I think that most Texans know that in their hearts. And so I think it's time for us to bring people together with a heart to talk about saving people's lives. And that means taking care of immigrant lives. That means getting these assault rifles off the street that not far from where these migrants died is Uvalde, Texas, where clearly our policies and our policy choices are putting lives at risk. Same thing with abortion rights. Women and folks in the state's life will be at risk. The Texas statute on abortion that will be about to go into effect says that essentially you'd have to prove that somebody might be about to die for them to have access to basic abortion care. The fact that they can say that they are for people's lives when we have people being found dead in trailers and they're using it as a political stunt that we have children who were just buried in Uvalde, it is just wrong. And there's a real moment where we need to come together as a country and in the state and say, if we want to protect people's lives, then very clearly we need a drastically different direction for our government.
Lastly, you mentioned this a little bit earlier that you were on the Austin City Council. Part of what you dealt with in your tenure there was affordable housing. And right now we're seeing rents skyrocket throughout the country in terms of the median national rent. It exceeded $2,000 for the first time in history. And people are unable to keep up right now. What would you do when you're more than likely and very hopefully elected to office in the fall? Would you be in favor of ending the Faircloth Amendment, expanding Section 8 for more affordable housing so we're able to tamp down some of these prices? I mean, what are some of the lessons you learned from Austin City Council that you could take to the national level to help your district and others in terms of housing?
Man, we could have a whole other interview about this. I was chair of our housing committee on the Austin City Council, and it's a core issue that we don't talk enough about, but most people are talking about at their kitchen table day in and day out. I believe part of the federal government's role is to come into places like the South and support working families when they're being discriminated against and hurt. Because many of the things we tried to do in Austin, tried to figure out how we could provide some measure of rent control, tried to pass policies so that landlords couldn't discriminate against folks showing up with Section 8 vouchers. It's a real issue that especially impacts people with disabilities, other folks that have vouchers. We saw the state government fight back against us. They blocked our attempt to put fees on huge developments that would pay for affordable housing. They blocked our anti-discrimination law and legalized discrimination. The federal government, from voting rights to workers' rights to immigrant rights to abortion care to housing, has a responsibility to come in, kind of try to fix things in states like Texas where you have a right-wing regime that has largely overstepped. So I think repealing the Faircloth Amendment, expanding public housing, incentivizing and pushing for more housing productions in fast-growing cities, having some measure of rent control allowed by the federal government, each of those things are things we need to be looking at. And at its core, it's about tackling income inequality, power for working-class people, building tenants' associations, building unions. And that's something that we can each be doing in our communities and that we should be calling on our members of Congress to be leaders on rather than just reacting to.
Greg Kasar, running in Texas's 35th district. Thank you so much for your time today, Greg. Really appreciate it. Great to talk to you.
it's good to be with y'all. And I just think we need to both mourn these losses that we are feeling, but then also to turn that mourning into organizing and look forward to being with y'all every step of the way on that.
100%. And before I actually let you go, where can people find more about your campaign, contribute, help, et cetera?
We're on all of the social media platforms, just at Greg Gassard, G-R-E-G-C-A-S-A-R. And there are so many great progressives that are currently running that you should support, and other folks that will soon be joining me. We just saw Delia Ramirez win in Chicago, Summer Lee up in Pennsylvania, me and Jasmine Crockett here in Texas. And so we just need to keep that wave going. Thank you all so much.
Awesome. Really appreciate it. And we will put those links in the description of the podcast and of the show here on YouTube. All right. With that said, folks, we are going to head into the fun half of this program. But first, Matt, what happened with the solo Lek reckoning last night?
So David Griscom is out with COVID, unfortunately. I think he's doing okay, though. I haven't heard from him today, but he's burned up yesterday. But I went solo last night. We did have a pre-recorded interview with Morgan Levy of Starbucks ATX, 45th and Lamar in Austin. Folks might want to check out that. I really like hearing from these workers. We had Jazz Brissack on MR, and Morgan said that the Buffalo unionization, after that went through, there was orders from corporate to say, don't, if you're asked about what happened in Buffalo, don't talk about it. And that was sort of like the kindling for them thinking, hey, maybe we should do that in our own store. So that patreon.com/leftreckoning. And I also did the post game for free last night. So that's up twitch.tv/leftreckoning.
Awesome. All right. Well, feel better, Griscom. And we have Binder and Brandon. All right. With that said, we're going to bring in Matt Binder and Brandon Sutton. But a reminder, MR25 for at justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the code MR25. It won't last, though. It might be at the end of the day, right? Is the last you can use this code. So if you want some great fair trade coffee, sustainable growing, MR25, check it out. But here are our there we go, our guests. Hello. There you are, Brandon. Hey, Binder.
Hey, how are you?
Good. Hey, everybody. How's it going?
Going well. Going well. What's happening over on Doomed and Scam Economy, Binder?
There is a lot going on, but this week we focused on the number of things going on in the QAnon world. If you can believe it, it is June 2022, and there are new things in store coming from QAnon conspiracy theorists. For one, Q is back. The anonymous user who started this whole conspiracy theory back in 2017 disappeared shortly after Trump lost the presidential election in 2020 and has been quiet ever since. Suddenly he decides, or she decides, or they decide to come back now. So on Doomed on Monday, I had the author of The Storm Is Upon Us, Mike Rothschild, on the show to talk about Q's return, what's going on there, how whoever is behind Q really screwed up this time in hiding their tracks, because signs are really, more signs than ever, I should say, are really starting to point towards Jim and Ron Watkins at least having some insider knowledge of who Q is, or helping Q write on their website, if not being Q themselves.
Right.
So that is available now at youtube.com/Matt Binder, and will be up very shortly at doomedcast.com and wherever you listen to podcasts. And then tonight on Scam Economy, I have on another QAnon episode, if you can believe it, a QAnon episode that intersects with cryptocurrency.
Whoa.
Logically, AI did a fantastic report about two QAnon influencers who used their stature in the QAnon world to create pump and dump scams via cryptocurrency. And the story is, first of all, insane, but also there is a very real human toll here, including an individual who took their life because of all this. So that's tonight at on Scam Economy, youtube.com/MattBinder at 9 p.m. Eastern time, and it will be up as a podcast right after at scameconomy.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Awesome. All right. Well, that double up on Q. If you want to, someone wrote in, have you read my email? Says, so Q is finally out of jail? could be. Brandon, what's happening over on the discourse?
We'll have a new public freebie episode out on SoundCloud soon, actually. Maybe it's to celebrate the freedom of the 4th of July, but, you know, assuming my co-hosts will deign to grant me their presence, we'll be able to, like, spread our message in public now on the birth of our nation.
Ah, the gospel.
The gospel.
All right,
city
well,
shining on a hill.
Lovely. Yeah, that's how it feels. 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now. But I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second.
The Majority Report.
Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt.
Who?
What is up, everyone? Nomi Keen.
You did it. Let's go, Brandon.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
I'm going to go throw up.
Libertarians.
They're so stupid though.
Common sense says of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion. Sold. It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop. You can call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we seen you. All right, folks.
It's just the week being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled, folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.